In the year 1991, U.S. Flight 1313 soared unknowing unto its death. As the vessel sank into the ocean's depths, three boys washed ashore on Skull Face Island. Near death, pursued by vicious creatures, the boys stumbled upon shelter. Who built it and for what purpose, none could say. But, to their shock and amazement, a 55-inch TV glowed within, streaming every movie ever made.
I'd stick my neck out for nobody.
What the hell is this gigawatt?
You're an inhuman monster!
I said good day!
After 20 years struggling for survival, they managed to repair the shelter's communication device. Perhaps someday, they'll be rescued. But until then, they'll watch and discuss movies, hoping, praying you're listening.
Hello there, this is Adam Frazier, and you are listening to Skull Face Island, the official movie podcast of geeksofdoom.com. As always, I'm joined by Nintendo Entertainment System's Ice Climber World Champion, David Allen.
Hello.
And the Miss Elizabeth to my Macho Man Randy Savage, producer Tim Grant.
Hello. Not sure how to take that one.
You are my beautiful valet.
And you're Macho Man.
Well, obviously.
You got this backwards.
I'm currently wearing a pair of panties with three stars on them. Who else is Macho Man here? That's what I thought. Today on the show, we'll discuss the epic sci-fi fantasy adventure drama Cloud Atlas, written and directed by Andy and Lana Wachowski and Tom Tickver. But first, let's throw out some Skull Face Selects, which are also known as our weekly picks and recommendations for you, the listener. David, you are first.
All right. My pick this week is a Criterion collection film, of course, and it is Robert Altman's Tanner 88. Miniseries documentary about a fictional presidential candidate named Jack Tanner. And it's really cool because he actually interacted with a lot of the candidates in 1988. You can watch it streaming now on Hulu.
Awesome. My pick is AMC's The Walking Dead, based on Robert Kirkman's zombie survival comic book series. The first two seasons are currently available on Netflix Instant, so you can get caught up. And season three just started on AMC, and it is fantastic. So if you're not watching it, you definitely should be.
And my pick, if you want nothing to do with politics and you're not too cool with dead people, is the heartwarming pick of the week, is what I'm calling it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually one of my favorite movies thus far this year. And that is probably the greatest movie about a man-child Olympics. That's Dodeca Pentathlon.
Mm.
Fantastic movie. It follows two brothers, and it really finds them kind of estranged from each other. And it's because of this one event that they had, competition, really, as children. And they've never really been the same, and they basically decide to have a rematch, and just ridiculous things ensue. It's so good. I would watch it tens of times. It's fantastic. It's out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome. So I guess we should boot up the old Geek-O-Matic Telefax now, right, Tim?
That's right.
All right, let's look at the news here. First headline, Nick Cage to star in remake of Kirk Cameron's Left Behind movies. Oh my goodness.
I don't care about
who
this.
Who else would do this, though?
That's true. If anyone's going to headline a remake, guys, the star of The Wicker Man himself, Nick Cage, is prime for this.
Right.
Next headline, Disney is going to hold off on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And David Fincher is looking for Brad Pitt to lead.
How many movies is David Fincher developing right now?
Way too many. 50 movies. And 47 of them have Brad Pitt in them. All right. Well, whoa. Guys, Marvel news.
Oh, my goodness.
X-Men Days of Future Past blends X-Men and Terminator, says Mark Miller. And he also gives updates on Deadpool and Wolverine. So I guess we should talk about this a little bit.
Okay. All right.
The 20th Century Fox Marvel guru, Mark Miller, who's kind of in the position that Joss Whedon is in over at Marvel Studios.
Right.
He's kind of in control of the X-Men First Class sequel, and he's saying it's going to be crazy. He's quoted as saying, you've got robots, you've got time travel, you've got superheroes, it's got everything in one film. So is this their way of essentially rebooting the X-Men franchise without necessarily having to reboot it?
No, I think that this is an apology for 3.
Right.
This is that's it. I think the rest of it's fine. The rest of it's going to stay in because some other news that was released was that there's apparently a secret cameo of Famke Janssen as Jean Grey in the new Wolverine film, the upcoming right. Wolverine film. That tells me that they're going to stick with it. This is the same universe, but
it'll be interesting.
I guess a reboot technically.
Yeah.
But like a Star Trek reboot. Like
right. It will be a reboot with the same actors, which is right. very bizarre.
Right. It's basically, I think they're just saying, we're really sorry about
killing everybody and taking everyone's powers away, guys.
Yeah.
And he also gave an update on the Deadpool movie, saying that they've turned in a, quote, amazing script, and he's confident the fans will be stoked, and Ryan Reynolds is still, quote, in love with the project and still wants to do it.
So this makes me very happy.
It will be interesting to see. It's hard for me to imagine Deadpool as a spinoff on his own because he's such a crazy character. But
yeah.
Well, I think Ryan Reynolds, I mean, that's who you got to pick.
Ryan Reynolds has been tied to this since the very beginning. He is an avid fan of Deadpool. I remember him speaking about their plans for the trailer when this like initially started rolling, like way before even Green Lantern. And he even said that the trailer would be narrated by Deadpool because he knew it was a movie. And in the movie, he would make fun of Ryan Reynolds for playing him in a shitty Wolverine movie.
Oh, man, that's like, good.
Like, completely self-referential, breaking the fourth wall, completely self-aware.
That's exactly what it needs to be.
Has to be that.
And apparently the only thing that was really holding it back was Fox CEO Tom Rothman, who just left. So it sounds like he was the one that was really saying, guys, I don't know if we can do this. Right. He's gone, so looks like it's going to happen.
Great news.
I think it's time now to get down to some business. David, Tim, do you have your pajamas on?
Absolutely.
Macho Man pajamas, yes.
To the cloud.
Based on the 2004 novel by British author David Mitchell, Cloud Atlas is an epic story of humankind in which the actions and consequences of our lives impact one another throughout the past, present, and future. As one soul is shaped from a murderer into a savior, and a single act of kindness ripples out for centuries to inspire a revolution.
That's it. The music from my dream.
The whole movement I wrote imagining us meeting again and again in different lives. Different ages.
I can't explain it, but I knew when I opened that door,
a powerful deja vu ran through my bones.
I heard it in a dream. I was in a nightmarish cafe, and the waitresses, they all had the same face.
No reason to hide. I know you are Sonmi 451.
So I'm going to be thinking about this movie for quite a while.
Yeah,
I haven't really been able to decide exactly how I feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
We essentially have 6 different storylines, all sharing in theme and all connected to each other by some form of communication. Mm-hmm. Now, bear with me here. The first story is a journal being read in the second that is represented by a piece of music that is listened to in the third, which is a detective novel being read in the fourth, which is a movie being watched in the fifth, which is a webcast broadcast, hologram essentially,
kind of thing, yeah.
That's being heard in the sixth. And then the sixth itself is an oral story being told by one of the characters. So I've read the book. I'm a big fan of the book.
Yeah.
Plot-wise, it's very, as far as I can remember, it's very accurate,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was, that wasn't going to be the hard part. Let's see here. But the structure is very, very different. So in the book, you actually visit these stories only twice. Once you get the first half, and then you travel through each of these communication methods.
You kind of go up the ladder and then back down the ladder.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So you start or you end where you started. And because they changed the structure, they really had to, I think, mess with the pace a little bit more, and they had to be more dependent upon lighter touches like humor, which there was a great deal of. And
it's very whimsical.
Really effective, too. Mm-hmm. Aesthetic, just by having it be this kind of breathtaking visual. Mm-hmm. And then the performances. Each actor playing a character in every story. And yeah, I mean, all of these things did sort of, I think, help to keep you entertained during what is a very long movie. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. Batman length.
Yeah, yeah, the Batman length.
That's the official, that's what we call it.
Yeah.
Batman
length. It's official.
Yeah.
I mean, if we say it's official, it's official.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's basically, I feel like it's a universal story about universal stories. The one thing I can see about this movie is that it's one of the boldest I've ever seen.
Yep.
Particularly with the actors, because the race of actors, it's a multiracial cast,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to determine the race of the character that they're going to play.
Yeah.
And nor is that true for the gender either. And I felt like there was something really cool about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's times when Halle Berry was playing a white woman mm-hmm. or an Asian man, and I was like,
yeah, an Asian man.
I had
man,
no
exactly.
idea.
Yeah, and I think that this is obviously a touchy subject. This is something that goes back to the jazz singer, but I think the fact that this multiracial cast being multiracial in the first place, and everyone sort of playing all of these different races and genders, really sort of, I mean, I don't want to give it more importance than it actually deserves, but it felt kind of monumental.
Yeah, it felt substantial in that way.
So there was that, which I thought was really, really interesting. And then the other thing, too, is that this is a film by two, I guess you would say, a set of directors, and then Tom Tykwer, because the Wachowskis, but who are very eccentric. They've got hit or miss careers,
mm-hmm.
and they really balanced each other out really well. Each of them took 3 segments to direct. And then, yeah, I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say it's a masterpiece or anything like that. It really more reminded me of the sort of golden era of Hollywood with those kind of big ensemble films like the Roman stories or, you know, the World War films.
Yeah.
And it's basically, to me, it's not artistic, but it was compelling. I was entertained, and it's even smart to a degree.
Awesome.
So.
Well, yeah, I think I agree with you for the most part there. I would disagree that it isn't artistic. At least, I mean, if you want to say anything about the movie, it was artistic from the makeup to the wardrobe, the production design, all those elements times 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine the amount of work that went into making those. Like, how long does Tom Hanks have to sit in a prosthetics chair for some of that stuff that he was doing?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Hugh Grant, for that matter.
Yeah. But all that stuff I thought was spectacular. Of course, it's not going to be the kind of sweeping, dare I say, pretentious, you know, Terrence Malick style of artistry.
You dare not.
You're not going to see blades of grass for 45 minutes in Cloud Atlas. Obviously, hundreds of very skilled people worked, you know, painstakingly on creating these worlds and characters. And if anything, if the story fell flat, if the messages fell flat, at least all 6 of those worlds I thought were fully realized.
Yeah.
I believed I was in every single one of them when I was in it.
Which is a feat on its own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As David said, you know, the film follows a journey of souls kind of going up and down this ladder of enlightenment, and they constantly collide and smash into each other over the course of hundreds of years. And there's this recurring theme of fighting against the status quo, you know, fighting for freedom, for love.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the big theme that runs throughout the whole movie is the idea of spiritual rebirth, you know, which was an important theme throughout the Wachowskis' Matrix trilogy. But here in Cloud Atlas, it's a far greater challenge because of the sheer scope of the narrative. I mean, it's really hard to get your head around at times. And I think, you know, you're going to see people, older people, walk out of the theater on this one.
Yeah.
There's going to be a generation of people that don't want this kind of story. And they were the same people that walked out of Inception and mm-hmm. the same people that probably walked out of Memento.
Or The Master, even.
Or The Master, yeah.
Yeah.
But personally, I really enjoyed the film. I think it for me, it failed to deliver that kind of knockout punch of like a wave of catharsis that I was expecting. In all honesty, there's something to be said about it being subtle and not being overly sentimental, which is kind of what you would expect from this kind of movie. But I could have used a little more of that, really, a little more sentimentality, a little more emotion, just to kind of push me over the edge, you know, to really bring it home. Mm-hmm. But if nothing else, like you said, it's definitely bold, it's beyond ambitious, and it's really a good example of modern science fiction going forward. I think our stories, as humans, are going to continue to get more and more complex as we continue to create new technologies. And the last thing I want to say is, while, you know, it can be seen as a brilliant, bewildering jumble of ideas, it remains compelling and, to the point I think you were getting to, important in a way, by offering a thoughtful, intelligent examination of issues that humanity will probably continue to confront throughout our existence. It is timeless in that respect. I don't know if the movie itself will be timeless, but the ideas that it presents are definitely
timeless and
universal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what we thought. Tim, obviously, didn't see it. Too busy.
Didn't see it. Nope. Working on my next canoe.
Another canoe?
The other one was dashed on the rocks and destroyed. I do have a few questions for you guys.
Go for it.
So I've watched this trailer a few times leading up to watching other movies, and This resistance to seeing this movie has built up inside of me.
Okay.
I really can't stand watching the trailer.
It's a bad trailer.
Okay. All right. So, but here's my issue with it. Not necessarily the way the trailer is crafted. I don't really like movies that lean heavily on a gimmick. Gimmick is a strong word, but on the idea of plots intertwined.
Yeah.
Inception, everyone loved it. I think it's a good movie, but I couldn't buy in completely because I just got tired of it. I got tired of the whole idea of it because it was more about the game than about a story, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. We can go into that later if you want. So that's my fear with this, is that it's more about the idea of six intertwining stories put together and less about an actual story with, you know, of humans. Am I reading into it correctly, or am I completely off and should just abandon this idea and go see the movie?
I think that that's an accurate reading of the trailer, but I think in the movie they handle it really, really well. Just with, because they're not so separate from each other. Because the thing about it is that each of these stories is influencing each story. So there's sort of like sometimes it's a shared struggle or it's it inspires somebody, something like that. And so it very much feels whole.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a really good job with that because that's something that's so, I think, important
in the
novel. I did
think the editing was fantastic.
Yeah. There are moments where just by the sheer nature that the movie is 2 hours and 40 minutes and you have a couple high points where there's the sort of like fast editing, it's all really well done, but it does get to where you're starting to think, when is my sort of resolution coming?
Mm-hmm.
But that, I'd say that only happens maybe momentarily, because then it kind of comes and it hits you. And I think there's so many continuities and constants for each story that you really do feel like you're watching one story. And it never actually feels so separate. Mm-hmm. And there's a great part in the very, very beginning where one of the characters is writing, and they essentially say, like, you know, I know that this may feel a little jarring, but bear with me.
Yeah.
Like, it'll make sense.
Yeah.
And it was completely accurate.
It just unfolds.
Yeah, it really,
you know,
does.
For me, it was just, for me, it was just watching it unfold. And I kept my head where I was in that moment in the film. And I didn't worry about what was going to come next or what story was going to be connected to what. And I think I enjoyed it a lot more for that.
No, I think so, too.
So, David, you say that you don't feel like it's artistic. Can you clarify that? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, when I say artistic, I'm not actually speaking to the sort of like practical, you know, creation of the film. Because what Adam said is absolutely correct. There is an unbelievable amount of work that went into this film.
Yeah.
And you can see how much, I mean, I feel like this is probably a very serious passion project for a lot of the people involved, not just the directors. Like, but when I say artistic, I just mean, it's probably a little bit of a pretentious definition when it comes to film, but it's not very heavy. It's not a heavy movie.
I think what you're saying is it toes the line closer to the Matrix or the Matrix sequels, rather, even like being a, somewhat of a blockbuster or a straightforward entertainment, you know, popcorn mm-hmm. kind of movie that is just soaked with all these very heavy ideas.
Right, and, you know, right. It's I think that the idea is no, I don't even know if that's
it's not an art film, is what.
Yeah,
you're saying.
It's not an artistic. It's like not an artsy film. It's not. I feel like. The stories within each of the stories are really simple. They're really straightforward. Mm-hmm. I would almost say typical kind of themes as well. It's, you know, liberation, love, you know, these kinds of things, which is fine. I have nothing against those. But the exploration of these themes is not very deep.
Is it this year's Avatar?
No, I didn't like Avatar. I thought Avatar was a disappointment.
Well, I'm saying it from the standpoint as if Cloud Atlas gets nominated for, let's say, Best Picture.
Right.
You've got a movie that looks incredible. It's beautiful. It has all these things going for it from a technical aspect. But like you were saying, the themes and stuff might not be hitting that deep, or it might be kind of well-worn territory like Avatar was.
Yeah.
And, you know, up against something like Argo, obviously, there's no comparison.
I think I would probably quicker compare it to something like Lord of the Rings.
So what you're saying is kind of what I feared you would say. Because, and this goes back into my, my apprehension towards watching this movie with the whole six plots coming together. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason I don't like movies like that is that I feel like there's really no way to bring a bunch of these kind of secondhand ideas together until you just put them all together in one movie. and that's, I don't know.
Well,
you're not convincing me to see this movie.
My argument for that, though, is that these are not a bunch of secondhand ideas because this has source material. And it's that these were not a bunch of stories that they threw together because they didn't have any other way of doing it. These stories are intended to be told as they are, and the characters are meant to resemble each other in these different ways. And it all does speak to a grander story, and it all does speak to a grander theme.
Yeah.
And it does it well, but I mm-hmm. think my only criticism is probably more in line with yours, which is because that's the thing I was worried about, was that it was going to be overly sentimental, because everything in the trailer just makes it look like it's dripping with sentimentality.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I hate that stuff, because I don't think it's accurate, I don't think it's real to life, and I don't think it's a really good way of telling a story. I feel like it's too easy. But I think that with this one, it does end up going for really, it goes very seriously for subtlety. And because of that, you don't really get quite the emotional payoff that maybe you're waiting for.
Yeah.
There's bits and pieces of it here and there, but it's not quite what you're hoping for. That would be my only criticism.
Tim, I would say, I think getting at what you're saying, I don't want to say an attitude, but there is this idea that comes across while you're watching it that, like, the Wachowskis, I mean, I'm not doubting that they love the book or anything,
yeah.
But it's probably like, holy shit, this book is crazy. Like,
yeah.
This book is unadaptable.
Well, then we're gonna do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's adapt it because we can.
I think you're right. It does feel like the sort of ambition of the Wachowskis, but I actually think the movie, if there's anyone's style that's more prevalent, I think this reminds me more of Tick Fair's good films.
Yeah.
Than it does.
Such as
Tick Fair's good films. Yeah. I think Princess and the Warrior is really good.
Okay.
Heaven, I think, is pretty solid. And Run Lola Run. But Run Lola Run's kind of separate because it's almost a short film.
Yeah.
Sure. So.
Well, yeah, and
Perfume is not terrible. I don't care what anybody says.
Perfume, yeah.
So
it's terrible. I want to hear ratings.
Okay.
All right.
I will give the first ratings.
Sorry to cut you off there, by the way, Adam. I'm ready to move on.
No,
I don't think we're going
to. Perfume came into the conversation.
Things got weird. My rating, 6 Hugo Weavings.
Oh, my.
4 Hugh Grants and a bushel basket of Halle Berry's.
Oh.
That's a cricket sound effect right here.
Yeah.
That's a good long cricket right here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, David, what are your ratings?
I give it a journal, a symphony, a mystery novel, a B-movie, a broadcast, an oral story, and a whole lot of wigs.
You gave it 7 separate ratings.
I did.
I will have to consult the rule book, but I think that's illegal.
Well,
we may have to disqualify your rating. We'll find out next week. I'll consult. I mean, Martin's not here, so it's going to be a little difficult. But
all right.
Yeah, you can, now to clarify, you can give it like, say, 7 of some one thing.
Yes, correct.
Like 7 figs would have been appropriate.
Sure. Okay. 2 bananas, 3 coconuts.
Yeah, exactly.
But you gave it 1 of 7 items, and my brain's just not ready for that.
All right. Well, if that's not enough, then what I will say is that I would give it a well-needed reminder that Soylent Green is people.
Yes.
So.
Yep. There, all right. Here goes the spoilers-free show.
You gotta tell them Soylent Green is people! We gotta stop them somehow!
So it turns out Adam and I were recruited into an impromptu contest of wild boar polo with the native youths.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't quite get a chance to check out Martin McDonagh's 7 psychopaths.
Nope.
Much to the chagrin of our compatriot Tim, who had to referee the match.
That's correct.
Though I must say, he did look quite splendid in his black and white vertical stripe body paint that the natives slathered him with.
Mm, yeah, Tim, I know you're upset with us that we missed it. Would you like to give some of your thoughts on the film to spare the listeners from our, you know, incompetence, I suppose?
Sure. First, let me say thank you to David. What can I say? I have a good body. So 7 Psychopaths is so good. There's actually a lot of buzz that's going about that's saying that it could be nominated for Best Original Screenplay for an Academy Award.
Interesting.
And I really don't give a shit about that. But what I do have to say about this is that fantastic movie.
All right.
It really gets.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Thanks. That was good.
It was really good.
Okay.
Before we move on, let's take a time out here to recognize the folks that keep the generators running and the mighty T'Challa at bay. Geeks of Doom has all the best geek-related scoops on comics, movies, television, and pop culture paraphernalia. To help us avoid certain death, please visit geeksofdoom.com. Now, back to the show. It's time. It's sequel time.
Oh, boy.
Guys, this week we're going to be playing the sequel game. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as the sequel game, First Blood Part 2. Tim will present David and myself with 3 films which in no way, shape, or form need a sequel. And we will be forced to create theoretical sequels to appease the gods. In today's show, we're going to be forced to make them horror films.
To horror sequels to non-horror films.
That's right.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we need to hurry this up, guys, because I heard T'Challa out there stomping around earlier, so we need to get this in the bag before he wrecks my fucking vegetable garden. Pissed again.
Pissed again.
Jesus.
That guy does not stay happy.
No.
So I'm going to give you guys the films here.
Okay.
Like you said, you're going to take these wonderful movies that should never have sequels, give some scary sequels to them. First movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Oh,
man.
Directed by Frank Capra.
The genius.
Starring Jimmy Stewart. A naive man is appointed to fill a vacancy in the U.S. Senate. His plans promptly collide with political corruption, but he doesn't back down.
Mm.
Okay. I'm going to be honest. I've not put a lot of thought into these because Cloud Atlas has so confounded my brain recently.
Sure.
So
you have 6 sequels for every idea in your head. I don't know what that means.
I don't either. All right. I love Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But as mentioned, because Cloud Atlas has been so prevalent in the brain recently, this is a sequel as if it took place in the Matrix universe post Matrix 3.
Oh my God.
And a horror movie.
Yes.
And a horror movie.
Yeah. So this Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is the same title.
Just always the same title.
Mr. Smith goes to
no
Washington.
New titles. Okay, yes.
No, no colons?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, if you guys have, you know, suggestions,
yeah, we may come up with
I'm
something.
I'm open.
Okay, good.
But this is about Mr. Smith from The Matrix and how he goes to Washington.
Holy shit.
To get rights for programs who are no longer being used. But people are like, you know, they're the lower caste of society because they treated everybody so badly. So he goes there. They refuse. And so he goes all apeshit, multiplies, and kills everybody.
Holy God.
Except for the little girl that got introduced in the third movie.
Right.
Because, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
She's, yeah.
Wow. Well,
man,
that is ambitious and yeah. bold.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. you could call it Mr. Smith Goes to Fuck Washington.
Man. You know what? Yeah. The image that I had in my mind was Mr. Smith kicking ass in a rotunda.
Yes. A lot of roundhouse kicks.
Yeah. roundhouse.
I just imagine him climbing, like millions of him climbing. Well, not millions. That's exaggerating. We'll say 10 to 15. Climbing up inside of the Capitol dome.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if mine can beat that, but I'll try.
Okay.
My sequel is called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, colon.
Good.
In a body bag. Jefferson Smith, after successfully beating the political machine and claiming his innocence, is murdered immediately. I'd say first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Just killed.
Going psycho on it.
He comes back as a ghost.
Uh-oh.
And trespasses cinematic realities and merges into It's a Wonderful Life, actually.
Oh my God.
And he's immediately confused as the ghost of Private Detective Guy Johnson.
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
All right.
That's yeah. pretty solid.
You're welcome, Hollywood.
All right, next movie, Shakespeare in Love.
All right.
John Madden directed, Gwyneth Paltrow, we all know.
Frank Gifford produced. What? He didn't do it.
So a young Shakespeare, out of ideas and short on cash, meets his ideal woman, blah, 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 is inspired to write one of the most famous plays of all time.
Which was?
Rocky Horror.
Oh, he wrote that?
That's what this is about.
Oh, my goodness gracious. All right, well, I went first last time. You go first this time.
All right. Sequel to Shakespeare in Love. Shakespeare, colon, in hell.
Oh, man.
As you may recall, at the end of Shakespeare in Love, the film ends with Shakespeare musing, "For she will be my heroine for all time, and her name will be Viola. A strong young woman castaway who disguises herself as a young man."
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my sequel, a killer disguised as a young woman who is also disguised as a young man trods the boards, as we say, in the theater of the Globe Theater, killing understudies and stagehands left and right, framing Shakespeare's lost love, Viola, for the crimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Man.
I like it.
Yeah, I like that too.
So ours are kind of similar.
Oh, my. So, what dark places has your mind went to?
So this one's going to get pretty dark, just so you know. So this one is called Shakespeare 13th Night. So basically, as you mentioned, they parted ways. He was inspired to write.
Sure.
So basically, Viola is driven mad by this unrequited love, and begins to blame Shakespeare's work for their the fact that they can't be together.
I see it.
She basically just ends up, like stalking him.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I'm familiar with that.
At the end of the film, the great climax is that she kills Shakespeare, buries his bones under the Globe Theater.
Motherfucker.
Dresses up as Shakespeare.
Whoa.
Which is why his later plays, some people do not attribute to him, and also get really dark. And she lives out her days as a mad Viola as Shakespeare.
Wow.
I gotta say, the movies that you present always feel rooted in some sort of reality-based logic.
Well, why not?
No, I'm sad. It's amazing.
Oh, thanks.
It's great.
I just come up with a pun. I put a colon in it, and I'm done. Next movie.
You know, the really scary thing about both of your sequels
Yes.
Is that neither of them is as scary as Roland Emmerich's Anonymous.
Touché, sir.
Yeah,
touché. Last movie. This one, I'm so excited about this one.
Okay.
I'm going to read the synopsis before I give you the title of the film.
Oh, thank you.
All right. A look at the annual journey of the Emperor Penguins.
Oh, my.
As they march. Single file. That's right. March of the Penguins.
Wow.
Narrated by the great Morgan Freeman.
Also known as God.
The horror sequel to March of the Penguins.
The coin toss.
That's true.
Determined
it goes,
earlier.
It goes back to me. It goes back to me.
That's right. It's yours.
Okay. So, many people know that this was a documentary. So, this really happened.
Yes.
Initially, they were going to follow it up, but they couldn't because of the true story that is still developing to this day.
Oh, my goodness.
So, instead, what they did was they started putting out these fictional CG movies like Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2. And,
fuck that noise.
Yeah. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Elijah Wood, what have you contributed to society? So basically what happened was they didn't tell you the real story because penguins have recently evolved.
Oh, fuck.
And they have formed into a communist society.
What?
And they are marching on the lower hemisphere of this planet.
Yep.
And basically, this is a horror film, but more of like a classic sort of psychological horror, you know, metaphor.
Sure, kind of like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Communist.
Kind yeah, of, sure. Exactly. Like a Red Scare movie.
Yeah, sure.
So basically, this is a documentary about how they are taking over like the lower parts of Africa. The World Cup. That wasn't real, man. Well, that one in South Africa, that didn't happen.
Fake.
It was fake.
Like the moon landing.
According to some. So this is about them taking over the lower half of the hemisphere. South America has become communist all over again. Venezuela's fine because Chavez is cool with them. And then
there are already a few penguins there.
Yeah, it's fine. Australia. They get along with everybody. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's basically a cautionary tale.
Wow.
The name of the movie is Penguins March, : This time, the bow tie comes off.
I just don't know about that at all.
I know. I think it's just Penguins March.
Yeah.
But I did want to throw the bow tie
in. In foreign countries, there will be the colon. There will be a different name.
Or maybe that's just the tagline.
Yeah. On the poster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bow tie comes off.
Well, wow. Yeah. I don't know.
And this one's narrated by Danny Glover, not Morgan Freeman, because Danny Glover is friends with Hugo Chavez.
Interesting.
I'm not making that up. That's real.
We're going to have to check PolitiFact on that one. Well, I'm going to try to top it. I don't know.
Okay.
My sequel for March of the Penguins is called Death March of the Penguins. Whew. Let me go ahead and give it to you.
Okay.
Republican-funded scientists, quote-unquote, in Alabama discover that a cure for breast cancer can be synthesized from the blood of emperor penguins.
All right, continue.
So, of course, poachers, big game hunters, Sid from Toy Story, they all comprise an expedition to the South Pole to hunt down and murder violently all the penguins. I'm talking every penguin they can fucking find. All the penguins are dead. But among the penguins, one true leader must rise. A true emperor, if you will.
Oh.
Of the penguins. And have a one-on-one showdown with Sarah Palin.
Oh my goodness. What is that one true leader's name? That one. Is it one penguin? Or is it just a person who comes to their defense?
It's actually, I didn't want to give this away, but it's actually the penguin from Batman Returns. You asked for it.
I was wondering what that actor had been up to.
Danny DeVito shows up as the penguin. He's in a big rubber duck boat.
You literally mean the penguin.
Yeah, no.
From...
What'd you think I meant?
I thought you meant one of the penguins in that movie.
I'm talking Danny Glover with flippers. Not Danny Glover. Not Chavez's friend. Danny DeVito shows up in a big rubber ducky mobile, tons of fucking penguins armed with rockets.
Yeah.
One-on-one with Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Who is actually a Transformer. Turns into a...
Okay, wait.
Turns into a helicopter with a big gun and starts killing all
the
coyotes.
Don't give away the third act.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right.
I'm done. Tim, wow. I will leave it to you.
Oh, I don't even know what to say. What do I even... Fantastic. Wonderful job.
Thank you.
Do I have to pick or something? Do I have to pick a winner?
Yeah, I feel like you should. Oh, shit. I mean, I put a lot of effort into this.
I didn't, but I still, you know... like winning things,
right?
Let me think about it here. So the first round, mm-hmm. I think that's gonna go to. I just love Mr. Smith in the Rotunda kicking ass.
I agree.
That's David.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
really
you.
Good.
We'll put a check.
The second round, I don't know. I kind of got caught up with the last round there. I don't even really remember what it was.
It was Shakespeare.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. 13th Night versus Shakespeare in Hell.
Yep. I like, I like Shakespeare in Hell.
Mm-hmm.
13th Night has such a ring to it. You know what I'm saying?
It does.
So I'm going to...
Not to be confused with 13 Warriors, 13 Knights.
Right.
I know it's not with a K, but...
Right.
So...
I just want to make that known.
While the Death March of the Penguins was great, just because of how ridiculous it ended up at the end with the Transformers tie-in... Actually, It's a clean sweep.
A queen to an emperor.
A clean sweep here for David.
Holy shit.
Oh,
I can't
man.
Even believe it. I'm so sorry, Adam, but
yes.
But you
it's just because we had that discussion and you enjoy the breast cancer awareness 5Ks, and here I come with just a fucking fresh piece of reality here about penguin blood and breast cancer, and I see how it is.
See, but the difference is that mine's true.
Yeah, it connected with me on an emotional level. You know, I mean, yours are the so bad it's good category that you need when you're drunk and when you're high. But this, I don't know.
Late night TNT is calling.
Well, the verdict has been handed down, and I would like to congratulate you, David, for sweeping it.
You were a worthy opponent. It was a pleasure to combat you once again.
Yeah, thanks.
I win!
You son of a bitch. But you saved my vegetable garden.
I did.
Thank you.
That was really my motivation.
Well, guys, that concludes another transmission from Skullface Island. As always, you can call the Skullface Island hotline at 980-272-0111 or email us at skullfaceisland@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at Skullface Island and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Skullface Island. Now, guys... as I just mentioned, it seems that my precious vegetable garden has once again been spared by the cutlass supreme-sized feet of T'Challa. I mean, have you seen him up close? Those things are huge.
They're really pretty enormous.
So what do you guys want to do? What would you say to a little gourd carving? I'm not sure if I have any pumpkins out there, but I got a few spaghetti squash, if you know what I'm saying.
I think I do know what you're saying. And I'm...
Spaghetti squash is so hard to get the guts out of.
Well, yeah, because it's all guts.
Yeah, it's just...
But you know what I say. No guts, no glory.
Oh, man.